You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week, we are so excited to kick off our fourth season by talking about Battle of the Sexes. This latest film starring Steve Carell and Emma Stone covers the famous exhibition tennis match in 1973 between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. In this episode, we are thrilled to have both Paul and Julie Levac to talk about the nature of injustice and what happens when the past meets the present. Plus, in a special segment, we also give a debrief of what happened this year at the Toronto International Film Festival. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome back to Screenfish. Welcome to the podcast. We are so excited this week to kick off season four by talking about Battle of the Sexes, the latest film from Steve Carell and Emma Stone, focusing on the real-life tennis match between Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King. And for this week, we are so thrilled to have our Screenfishers Julie Levac and Paul Levac in the arena at the same time. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Before we do that, guys, I thought that since we just all came off of binging through the Toronto International Film Festival, that maybe we could debrief a little bit on things we saw or how we felt about this year's fest. Guys, what did you think of TIFF this year? Was there anything that you learned?
Wow, TIFF this year was amazing, and I feel like it gets better and better every single year. This year was my first year starting to attend press junkets and getting a little bit deeper into not just seeing the movies, but being involved in more press stuff. And I got to tell you, it's very, very fascinating to not only see a movie, but then talk to people about it. Talk to the writer, the director, the cast. And it's like, even if you don't like a movie, you gain so much respect for what they've done and all of the work that they've put into it. So I've definitely grown to respect movies from all different sorts of angles. Putting that aside, I think that we saw 8 different movies. I'm going to try to go through the list because I'm a little bit crazy after all of that. we did 1% and Beast, which are two that I interviewed on, which you can see on Podomatic, and the reviews are going to be up very, very soon. We did Molly's Game, Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba, which was amazing. I'm not entirely sure what I can say negatively about that movie. You should go see it. It's going to be out. I'm almost 100% sure it's going to get a wide release pretty shortly. We saw Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, which was actually fascinating to hear the story behind how Wonder Woman came to be. And it's a totally different story than you would ever imagine about a polygamous couple, not couple, threesome. I don't know. What do we call it?
I think that's an adequate description.
Okay. We saw that. Let me think. Help me out, Paul. What else did we see?
Darkest Hour.
This is, remind me the guy's name.
Gary Oldman.
Yes.
Sirius Black.
He was epic. Honestly, I can't even say. He has got to win an award for this. It was amazing. The movie in general, the cinematography was stunning. The story was good. It moved well for a historical film. It was interesting. Wow. I don't even know. Paul, you speak on it because I know you loved it too.
It was a very, very good movie. I do need to call out, though, that initially, Julie, you didn't want to see that movie at all. But
oh, you're right.
This sounds like a battle of the sexes. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
We got, what? What are we, 3 minutes into the pod, and we've already started calling that out? Either way, I really appreciated Darkest Hour. It was a good movie. For all the things Julie already said, I was absolutely blown away by the cinematography in the film. Usually in these historical epics, you don't necessarily see you don't see the greatest camera work, but you don't see innovative camera work. And I was very impressed by what they presented in this film with that regard. The writing was really spot on. I think Gary Oldman's portrayal of Churchill was phenomenal. He nailed the accent 100%. Lily James playing his wife, I believe, did a phenomenal job as well.
I still think it's kind of so fascinating that when you talk about that movie, the first thing you guys always talk about is the cinematography.
Yeah, you can see it, Steve.
We didn't anticipate that either going into it, to be fair. I do need to roll back my previous comment. Lily James was Elizabeth Layton, his secretary, for lack of a better term. His wife was actually played by Kristen Scott Thomas.
So other than those movies, we saw with you as well, Steve, Mountain Between Us. We went to that premiere. Really cool to see Idris Elba and Kate Winslet there. I think that was the second Idris Elba film that we saw. He was killing it at TIFF this year. And then I'm trying to think. There's definitely one I'm missing. Paul, do you remember?
Yeah, the one we're talking about today?
Yeah, Battle of the Sexes, actually.
Yeah, I think that would round out the eight, if I'm not mistaken. Sorry. Like I said, there was a lot.
Didn't mean to trample on your sentence there, but I also was able to capture another movie called Bodied. It's a movie about the rap battle scene, kind of almost mockumentary style. It's not for the faint of heart.
But it took the Midnight Madness Award this year.
It did. It was good. It became kind of almost cringy in spots, because if you're familiar with how they produce these rap battles and watching the rap battles as they're produced on YouTube, they fell into a lot of the tropes that they already use within these rap battles. But it wasn't done in a comedic way. It was done almost in a purposeful way, and that kind of made it cringy, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Like it tried to take itself too seriously instead of making fun of the caricature.
There was a lot of good stuff this year, I thought. Actually, it's kind of funny because other than the two that we saw together, we saw totally different slates. Disaster Artist was a standout for me. I got to see Midnight Madness Disaster Artist. That was absolutely phenomenal. I'm not sure whether we'll podcast on that or not, but I'm really excited for the world to see that one come December, because that one was so much fun. It was an absolute riot. I did not think I'd enjoy it as much as I did. But the best movie for me that I saw this year was Florida Project. Hands down, it was Florida Project. I thought that was a really, really well-told story. That it was more of a character piece, and we'll talk again. We are going to podcast on that, Shelley McVie and Daryl, in a couple of weeks, so I won't get too much into it. But for me, that was hands down best of the fest. You guys didn't get to take in Three Billboards Near Ebbing, did you?
No, it was on our list, but we just couldn't fit it in. And I'm so disappointed because it ended up winning the Grolsch People's Choice Award, which is, although it looked like a really cool movie, I didn't hear much buzz about it. So I was really shocked that it won. And I'm happy for them, and I really want to see it now.
I'd heard that it was good. Like, it's one of those ones I'd heard buzz, but I was completely stunned by the Grolsch People's Choice Award. I thought it was going to be Shape of Water. I Tonya was getting a lot of momentum towards the end of the week, or even Lady Bird. All three of those were. Shape of Water was just like going crazy, and then Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri ends up becoming the Grolsch People's Choice Award. I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah. So tell me, Shape of Water, is that the one with the sort of alien looking guy?
It's the one with the fish one. That you didn't want to see.
Del Toro.
Yeah, sorry for cutting you off there.
That's cool.
Shape of Water, I had zero interest in seeing. It just didn't seem like my kind of film. I, Tonya, I was interested in seeing. That was another one that was sort of on our list, but didn't make the cut, so to speak, because you can only see so many movies. But I was really into figure skating when I was a kid. Not actually doing it. I'm not that talented, but I liked to watch it, and I was very interested in the story about Tonya Harding. And so I was actually kind of surprised that they would have that actress that I can't remember the name of. Oh gosh.
Margot Robbie.
Yes. Who I like. I like Margot Robbie. Having her as Tonya Harding. Fascinating choice. I'm interested to see how they play out with that.
One of the things I saw this year is that the environmental theme is very much alive and well, and it was showing up in surprising movies, ones I didn't expect. Mother, Aronofsky's Mother, that was basically half the movie or the whole movie. Downsizing, that was one that I took in, Downsizing, and I really enjoyed Downsizing. It was completely different than I expected. I think I was thinking it would be more like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It was fascinating. It was a really interesting movie, but it was all the environmental theme.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I did not expect that at all.
The premise of that movie didn't interest me at all. The cast was so attractive. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Amazing people, especially Christoph Waltz. I feel like I have to see everything with him in it because he's so incredible.
Christoph Waltz is hilarious in this movie, and he's just, he almost sort of steals it.
Matt As Damon. He should.
Yes. But yeah, so it was, again, the environment and social justice themes, I guess, sort of kept popping up, which often does at festivals. It usually does. But I think right now, with the Trump era taking off as it has been, those sort of things have been sort of pushed back to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question, Steve, as someone who saw the movie Mother?
Yes.
I don't deal well with horror films, and Mother, to me, although the cast looked awesome, didn't seem like my type of film. I wasn't really interested in seeing it. Although now I know what it's actually about.
Yeah.
Would I benefit more from knowing that in the background if I see it now, or would that sort of ruin my viewing pleasure?
No, it'll help you enjoy it.
I feel like the people, it's not getting very well received if I'm correct.
The truth is, if you know that Mother is one big allegory for spirituality and the environment, man, does it help. Because otherwise, it's sort of like getting hit in the face with a bat and you don't really know why. And the funny thing is, I'm not even kidding.
See, I watched the trailer and I was already trying to figure out where the story was going from the trailer, but I know nothing about what actually occurred.
Well, yeah, because if they actually told you what you were going to see, it is like getting hit in the face with a bat. It is so wild.
So is it like Shyamalan level bat-hitting, or?
It's like Shyamalan doing smack while being drowned under by somebody who really doesn't like him very much. I can't even describe.
What? I don't really know what that's supposed to look like, so.
I don't even know if I'm going to keep this part in the podcast. I'm just telling you, it is wild.
This has gone beyond a Screenfish podcast. Yeah,
so far. Down a rabbit hole. It's
just a bunch of us. This is how we talk when we're just like hanging out. You don't want to be friends with us. It's fine.
I'm going to use that at the end.
In which case, listen.
Well, maybe they do. Yeah. Random ramblings of deeper meanings of film. It's pretty much our life.
That actually seems like a good place to transition. Yeah, I would agree with you both. It was a good year. It's so funny to me that the films that I thought were standouts are not the ones people are talking about, and that is frustrating to me because I liked them a lot. But I look forward to seeing what these other films that are like Three Billboards and I, Tonya, when they get the wide release, because I have a feeling we're going to be hearing about them for several months. But since we were at TIFF and we were at TIFF together, of course, we did get to see Battle of the Sexes, which recaps the famous tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, of course, a 55-year-old retired tennis player. And this was back when Billie Jean King was at the top of her game. And it was an exhibition match to try and show who was better, men or women. It was sort of a significant event in sports history. And so this, of course, stars Emma Stone and Steve Carell. But before we do that, just a reminder that this podcast is open for spoilers. So if you haven't seen the film and it's one that you want to see or it's an issue for you, feel free to pause it and come back. But otherwise, we're going to talk about the film as in-depth as we can. So, guys, Battle of the Sexes, what did you think?
I liked the movie. I thought it was good. It didn't blow me away, though. I didn't love it. I don't know. I felt sort of a disconnect. I didn't dive in like I thought I would. Don't get me wrong. The cast is amazing. The acting is amazing. You both know that I love a good true story. You know, even if I know about the story in advance or not, I'm always very interested to hear this, and especially this story. I think it was a very important story that needed to be told, with respect to, you know, women's rights and equality and stuff like that. But it's interesting because I felt like the issue of women's equality was almost not the only, you know, it wasn't the only issue that was dealt with in this film. And it was almost outshone by the other topic, which was homosexuality and that struggle. And especially in the 70s where, you know, women were viewed differently back then. You know, what are we at, like 44 years ago this was happening? Women were viewed differently back then. Definitely homosexuality was viewed differently back then. And so Billie Jean King was struggling with multiple issues and being sort of in the public eye. And, oh, I could go on forever. But so what I will say is that I thought the movie was good, but there's just something that didn't quite hit the nail on the head for me.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I felt that it was trying. It wasn't quite a sports movie, but it wasn't quite a social issues movie either. It tried to blend the two worlds, and it's not that it didn't do it successfully. I think it did to a certain extent, but it wasn't. Phil's looking for a sports movie. This isn't one of the better ones. It's a good movie, but not a good sports movie. And for those looking for the other aspects, I think it was fine. The actor and actresses, Steve Carell and Emma Stone in this were, I think, the best ones you probably could have casted. Although I did say to Julie earlier today that Steve Carell was effectively playing himself again, which I think he's done a few times.
It's true.
Andrea Riseborough, who played Marilyn, I thought actually stole the show on a lot of scenes. I think she was very, very good in this. As well as Sarah Silverman. Julie and I spoke about her portrayal of Gladys. The problem with her is, and again, this is just my observation, but it felt like her character came across as a 1970s Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, no, I actually really liked Sarah Silverman in this, and I did mention that to Paul earlier, and he said, like, she's basically just playing what Sarah Silverman would have been like in the 70s, and I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'd like to hang out with her. That's fine.
There's nothing wrong with that. I just didn't think it was much of an acting stretch.
But for her, considering, doesn't she do just straight-up comedy roles or stand-up? Like, I think it was
a bit of a stretch for her. No, she's doing more dramatic stuff as well. She's broadened herself quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Wreck-It Ralph and, you know, Wreck-It Ralph and School of Rock.
Ouch.
There wasn't a lot of new ground for Carell in this character, but I do think that he was the right choice. I thought he handled the character really, really well. And Emma Stone, you could make the same argument about Emma Stone in some ways. Maybe that's a testament to their skill, but I do hear what you're saying. I totally do. I liked it. I might have liked it a little more than you guys. It wasn't the best of the fest for me, but I thought it was entertaining. I liked the idea, Paul, that you mentioned that it wasn't really a true sports movie, because it was, and the whole movie's about tennis. But at the same time, the movie's barely about tennis in some ways. Like, it's about one tennis match, but even that is almost anticlimactic.
Yeah, like, if you take tennis out of it entirely and replace it with, I don't know, women's basketball or...
Wait, what?
No, I'm serious. Or, like, women's golf, for that matter, or another sport entirely, right? And you sub that in, I don't think it would have taken away anything from the story or the acting that was put forth through this movie.
Well, I didn't realize that Billie Jean King started the WNBA. That's...
Well, you get what I'm saying, though. Like, in the sense that it's less of a plot point and more of a backdrop.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Because if you think about it, the true sports movie, if you will, so much of the action depends on the sport itself. So it was interesting because the actual tennis match is so anticlimactic. I mean, she absolutely pounds him in three sets. I think it's like 6-4, 6-3, 6-2. And they didn't try to make it to try to contrive it so that it comes down to one point or something. She just beats him. But one of the things I noticed is about halfway through the movie, when they're watching the first battle of the sexes, when he fights Margaret, is Margaret Court, isn't it?
Something like that. Yeah.
That they're all sitting around and she gets mad and she storms off and they all go, where is she going, or what's got her so upset, or something like that. And Sarah Silverman says, that's just fate, sweetie. And I don't think that that line probably is what her character would have said in real life. But I think what it is that everybody knew going into that movie, you know that they have to play each other and you know that she has to win. So the story is more about what's going on before and, you know, before and around the tennis match than opposed to the tennis match, which I don't know whether it makes it a true sports movie or not, but that was one of the things I really noticed.
Yeah, I mean, for covering a tennis match that was supposedly watched by 90 million people worldwide in over 36 countries, there was surprisingly less tennis than I thought there would have been, especially for the last match.
Well, you know what? I got to say, they have a lot to talk about. You know what I mean? It's a big undertaking because they have to cover the actual match, a little bit of her tennis history. They need to talk about the women equality issue, and they need to talk about the homosexuality issue, her struggle with, you know, her husband and her her girlfriend and stuff like that. So it's, you know, I think that they probably, thinking about that large undertaking, they probably did a pretty decent job at balancing them all. And I can't really give you something that I would do to change it. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Like
I said, I liked the movie. I just felt like there was something a little bit off, but I don't know what that is exactly, and I'm not sure how to fix it. So it's hard for me to judge it in that way.
It's being sold as sort of that sports movie. You know, you see the trailers and it's really just about that tennis match, but it really sits in the backdrop. So I could see what you're saying. I don't know whether it was what you expected or not. It wasn't really what I expected either, but I liked it. It's a little bit more of a character piece than I expected it would be. Really looking at her struggles, which is fine. That was not a problem. And I thought that she did a great job. And Marilyn really brought something different. And I think you're right, Paul. I think in some ways she was sort of a scene stealer. But again, I'm not sure why. I think there was sort of a freedom to her character that wasn't in the other ones. Maybe because she wasn't in the tennis world.
Well, she felt free to be who she wanted to be. She knew, you know, she was into women. She knew who she was already. And she kind of helped guide Billie Jean King over to where she ended up being. Or going to at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. I think she was more of an influencer or a mentor, so to speak, to Billie Jean King's character.
Actually, that's an interesting way to look at it. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Because, like, she's introduced on the scenes and she already knows who she is. She knows what she wants. And quite frankly, she goes and gets it after the first hairdressing scene. But it's just, she's already established. She can be this way because she's not in the public eye. She can be this way because she's not a public figure. And I think that's where the conversation lies for this movie, to be honest.
Hmm. Let's talk about that issue then, because what I think we see in this film is there's sort of this tension between justice and injustice, and it seems to be all happening at the same time. So when you think about Billie Jean and what she was going through in this, can someone experience those two things all at once?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, but she eventually experienced justice when she won the tennis match and sort of got a lot more respect for herself and for women in general, especially women in the tennis world. But there was still the secondary issue that she was experiencing, which was her sexuality and that not being as accepted in the 70s. And still having all these other struggles in the background. So, yeah, I think that it is definitely possible to have both, unfortunately.
You know, a lot of times what you find in a film like this, and this is one of the things I liked about it, a lot of times what you find is they focus on one issue and it just sort of sticks. So it might have been last year, I think I saw Freeheld, and it had Ellen Page and Steve Carell actually was in that, and Julianne Moore. And it was just... And it was a totally different story. It was totally different feel. But one of the things I noticed was it was just focusing on the issue of gay marriage, and it focused on that, you know. Or you see another film and it focuses on women's rights. But this sort of tackled them both and balanced them out in a really interesting way. Because on the one hand, she starts the women's tennis, or I think it's the WTA, but I could be wrong on that. But the Women's Tennis Association. Sponsored by Virginia Slims, they just start it themselves because they're not getting equal pay. So I sort of expected the film to focus in more on that issue, but they've also balanced it in this thing. So you've got somebody who's gaining strength and fighting for equal rights, but still oppressed in a way that was unspoken. I thought that was actually pretty interesting.
That's interesting, Steve, that you were bringing up the equal pay thing, because although that does fall under the category of, women's equality, I thought that was fascinating about how much less money these women were making. It's disgusting. And unfortunately, it still does happen today. And I don't want to turn this podcast into, you know, some women's movement protest. I promise I won't. But it's just sad because it did happen and it still does happen, you know, less than it did. And it's funny because we were sitting in the theater, and although a lot of the stuff that Steve Carell was saying was hilarious and funny, and we all know, like, oh yes, that's how guys used to think, like women belong in the kitchen and this and that. There were a few things that he said, or that the other guys, I think Jack was one of the guys named, some of the stuff that they said, there were like kind of moans and interesting noises coming from the crowd because they hit below the belt. You know what I mean? Like if you've ever experienced sexism of any kind, it's like, ouch, you know what I mean? Like that's real. And even though they're making it into more of a comedy, you know, there's so much damage, underlying damage there. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, there's an interesting conversation she has with Bill Pullman, who I can only assume that this takes place just before he gets elected, you know, and fights off the aliens. there's a scene where she's talking to Bill Pullman, Jack, the character Jack. And one of the things that she says is, I don't take Bobby seriously. He's a clown. But you scare me because you actually believe this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting distinction because she sort of plays along. It was really interesting to me how she sort of played into it. You know, he does all the sexist, chauvinistic pig thing. She even gave him the pig at the start of the tennis match, and which actually happened. The sugar daddy and the pig was what they did because it was all played up for laughs. But Jack sort of exemplifies the real oppression in a lot of ways in him. And she recognized that. She wasn't afraid of Bobby because anything he said was so ridiculous. And she understood it was all publicity stunt. However, she knew that Jack was the key thing. And Jack was the one that booted them from the original tennis association. But it was interesting too, because like you said, there is that injustice, but at the same time, she's not really free. And I think they say to her repeatedly that if word gets out about her interest in Marilyn,
yeah,
then she's going to lose everything. When she starts the tennis association, she says, you know, we could lose everything sort of conversation. But that's the one that she's really afraid of.
Well, because if she loses everything from the tennis association, she could just go crawling back to Jack's group realistically. Mm. If she loses everything when Marilyn becomes public, all of that's off the table. And you truly lose everything then. Mm. Her career would have been over with effectively.
Yeah, in those moments, you can really sense the conflict and in the almost the hypocrisy because is it hypocrisy? Maybe hypocrisy is not the right word. The world wasn't ready for those conversations yet. I'm not sure. And I guess that Alan Cummings sort of says that. He says, a day will come when you can love who you want to love, but that's not today. One of the things I appreciate about the film. And Alan Cummings sort of, too, is one of those mentor type characters in a lot of ways that you were talking about, Paul. He's not challenging her to come out, but he sort of understands what she's been going through.
Well, I think he plays more of the almost the father figure, for lack of a better term, for her. Because he looks out for her husband, you know, lets her cry on her shoulder when he needs to, provides advice when he's not really providing advice.
yeah.
Gives her pieces of knowledge without talking directly to what she's speaking about. So I think more of the scene when they were getting her fitted for her final tennis dress for the last match.
Yeah.
And there was some comment, I don't remember the specific line he said, but there was some comment he made alluding to, like, I know the struggles you're going through. I'm kind of dealing with them as well, but I can't tell you specifics because we'll screw us both over.
You know, I was interested, too, a little bit in the character of Margaret Court, because Margaret was just sort of antagonistic throughout the whole film. It's interesting, too. She actually uses the word sin at one point, but doesn't seem to have any religious ties in the character, at least not overtly mentioned, but just the negative tone.
I think, though, for her comment, I mean, not to tread on your...
No, go, please.
Steve. I think her comment more is society's morals coming through in the script. So I think her making that comment is more representative of society at that current juncture on how they would have viewed it should that have been public knowledge. And I think that's kind of what they were trying to allude to by writing that line in there.
Yeah, that's
considering
fair.
There's no religious ties.
Yeah, it was interesting because there really wasn't, and then all of a sudden they just sort of dropped that word, and that's a very heavy word to use.
I think with Margaret's character, ultimately she was the one who was a little bit older, maybe playing that more wiser figure. She's got a family. All the other girls are, you know, effectively single, unattached, and they're doing their own career thing. And oh, and I feel like she could also have a little bit of jealousy because she seems a little bit trapped. You know, she has a new baby, and I've been there. I know that you can feel stir crazy and like you're missing out on a lot of stuff. So maybe she does sort of feel a little bit jealous that these other girls are thriving and she's maybe held back a little bit.
So just digging a little bit more into Court's backstory, apparently she's a pastor in Australia.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And she's fighting against marriage equality or legalizing same-sex marriage in Australia currently right now.
Really?
Like part of the political fight on that. Yeah, I don't have the full details. I'm just scanning Google real quick.
This always raises the key question of how does the church respond? You have that. It's this sort of people drawing the line in the sand and saying, yeah, we're willing to love people, but we are not willing to actually drop our guard or have these conversations. And I struggle with that. I really do struggle with that.
It's a difficult conversation to have in general, you know, regardless if, you know, you're going to bring in the religion aspect or not. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. Do you know what I mean? And I was raised to love everybody equally. I've known other people of more religious backgrounds to say that that's what they do. But then when it comes down to it, if there's someone of a different walk of life, they're not always so accepting. So it's definitely a tough one. And I think that this conversation is bigger. It is a lot bigger than this movie and a lot bigger than this podcast.
There could have also been a lot of backstory that was filmed that ended up getting cut, right?
Could be.
At the last moment, this is where we ended up.
There seems to be some struggle going on within her from before. She's already come in that into the tennis association with that going on within her.
One thing I found fascinating was Billie Jean's husband, because he's definitely a background character. I just found it so fascinating how he sort of immediately realizes that she's cheating on him with Marilyn, and he doesn't really do anything about it. He doesn't mention it. He would probably drop hints, but it's you can tell that he really loves Billie Jean and really respects her tennis career and does not want to bother with her emotionally. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of, Paul, you and I were talking about this before, how there's a lot of athletes who cannot handle the stress of, you know, personal issues while they're training for something. And I think that the husband respected that, didn't want to start that big argument right before a big tennis match. But in general, even after the tennis matches were done, she still continues to see Marilyn, and the husband just sort of takes it. And I found that very interesting. And I'm sure in real life there was a much bigger struggle. But at the end, we see what actually happens in real life, which is that she gets a divorce from her husband. She gets together with Marilyn. The husband goes on to have children with somebody else. And they're like godparents to these children. And I was like, wow, that guy must be so patient. I just can't believe it. And I mean, I think it's amazing. Yeah, very interesting aspect of the story.
One of the things I saw is it's interesting how the present informs the past. you know, we sort of get a sense for the struggle that was going on. But a guy like Larry, you know, I'm certain it must have been much harder for him. Maybe it wasn't. But now things are great. It seems like the families are very close based on, you know, what we see in the tagline at the end. But it certainly would have affected, I think, the writing and the portrayal of his character because of how that relationship ends up.
I looked into more of the husband's background, actually, a little bit earlier today when prepping for this. And they don't really make a point to state this, but according to his Wikipedia page, just putting that out there, because you know we all know how factual that may be backed up. But according to his Wikipedia page, he actually secured the Philip Morris or the Virginia Slims backing for the original Women's Pro Tour and not Gladys, as it's led to believe in the movie.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and it adds another wrinkle. But in the same token, him and Billie Jean also met while playing on rival schools, playing tennis on rival schools. So he came into the picture already knowing that he's second fiddle to her love of tennis. Hmm. So I think that's where he kind of situated himself, as he alludes to in the movie a couple times, actually, when he threatens Marilyn's character, basically telling her, if you come between tennis and her, you'll lose.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And actually, that seems to sort of develop as the film goes on, because she's really, truly focused on Bobby. One thing I read about this that I thought was interesting is that there was a huge backlash after, not a huge backlash, but a controversy for many, many years, because people accused Bobby of throwing the match to get out of debt with some creditors because of how badly he played. And I was thinking as I read that, I thought that's really interesting too, because even then there seems to be this sort of disbelief that he would lose the match, or at least lose the match as badly as he did. I mean, he's 26 years older than she is, and she's the top women's tennis player in the world. But there still seems to be that last sort of clinging to, he's better than this, that I thought was really fair. Interesting.
But in the same token, with the gentleman that would actually set this up in the first place as a promotion, I wouldn't necessarily put it past him to do something like that.
It could,
based on the character we saw.
Apparently, they even hooked him up to a lie detector test, and he said that he did not throw the match, and he passed it, so apparently, according to Wikipedia.
I was going to say.
But I mean, why is it that I can't believe that they would make such a big deal out of it, that they would hook him up to a lie detector test. But this whole thing was such a massive spectacle. I mean, at the Houston Astrodome, 30,000 people. Paul, you mentioned earlier, you know, 90,000 people watching at home. Million, not thousands.
90,000 people is watching at home. It was not a very good audience.
70s now. No, honestly, and being carried in by scantily clad women and men on these carriages, and oh my gosh. And it's funny, actually, now that I say that, because Billie Jean didn't want that, you know what I mean? She didn't want to face him initially, and I think especially because of how much of a spectacle it would be. But then in the end, she sort of gives into the spectacle, which is quite interesting. And I'm wondering if that was for the $100,000, if it was to prove the point, maybe for both, who knows?
Well, yeah, the film sort of leans itself towards into the proving of the point, because she didn't want it to appear as though she was somehow afraid of the sort of challenge. I'm sure the money was a nice bonus, but it seemed like it was a far bigger risk to play the game than it was to actually, you know, ignore him. Because if she loses, like she said, if she loses, I think she said that she was afraid that it would set women's freedoms back 30 years just because of the incredible fear that, heaven forbid, women be viewed as not just pretty, but actually equal. But I mean, we still, like you said before, Julie, we still hear about this today. You hear Amy Adams making half the pay of Christian Bale for American Hustle and stuff like that. This stuff's all still going on.
Yeah, not just in the in Hollywood either, trust me. Been there. But I just want to mention one thing, and it speaks to Emma Stone's fantastic acting. which was the scene after she won the match. She goes back into the dressing room and sits and cries. And I could just feel so much emotion from that, because she was obviously happy. She was relieved that it was over, but she was also still in pain. I think that she was in pain because of, I don't know. I think it might also have to do with the struggle that she has upcoming with having to face her relationships, both with her husband and with her girlfriend, and what she's going to do next. Just with it was probably very emotionally draining going through that whole process and basically being torn down as a woman, just for entertainment value. I could just feel so much from that one little scene of her crying. It was amazing.
Mm. Well, this seems like a good place to start wrapping up, guys. Maybe let's do Screen It or Skip It. Battle of the Sexes, Screen It or Skip It?
I'm in between. I think that you should watch it. It's good. It's worth a watch. But if you can't get yourself to the theater, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. It can be viewed at home on your TV. I don't necessarily think that it has that big screen appeal. Definitely watch it, but you know, I don't think that you need to go out on date night and spend all that money on it. Do you know what I mean? It could be a Netflix situation.
I think I'm the same boat. Definitely screen it, but it's not one I'd rush out to theaters for. You're not going to see big action. You're not going to see big sound. This can definitely be done on Netflix or on a plane or on a laptop.
You can watch it on a plane.
Just watch it on your phone. It's fine.
Yeah, Battle of the Sexes on a plane.
Is Samuel L. Jackson in that?
He could be. But, you know, I imagine he'd be sick of these. Anyways.
Get these Battle of the Sexes off my
Yes.
I just snorted on the podcast. Please remove that.
No, that as your husband, that needs to stay in. Either way, screen it. However you feel like seeing it, I don't necessarily think it would be worth going to the theaters for, personally. You'll enjoy it, but
yeah, this is one of those times that I would bust out the Stream It myself. I actually think that it's worth going to the theater. Like if this is a film that appeals to you and you're excited about, like this, I think that's fine. But for the casual moviegoer, do you need to? No, I agree with you. You can wait till video and Netflix. Or the airplane, apparently. please don't watch it on your phone. Just don't do that to yourself. Just don't do it. But you know what? I do think it was a good film. I think it was well made and well done. I heard one reviewer talk about that it was it is one of the best films of festival season so far. I don't agree.
What?
I think
no.
Yeah, I did. And
wait,
again,
what did they say again? Can you run that by me again?
They said that it was one of the best films of festival season so far. So,
this was their first film of festival season, I take it then.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like I said, it's a good movie, but it's not what I expected, and there's definitely a whole other aspect to it that they don't show in the trailer, which is fair. But yeah, out of all of the movies that have been shown at festival season, that's a big statement.
Yeah, and I'm still bitter because they left Florida Project off the list and they put this, so that's probably tainting me as well. Honestly, it's a good film. It's certainly good. It's not a blockbuster you're going to be hearing about the shocking about making all this money. It really isn't, but it's well made. So, you know, I certainly think you can screen it, but you don't. I agree, you don't have to see it in the theater. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate having you back.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Definitely. It's great to be back. Thank you, sir.
Always. You guys are always welcome. And for the rest of you at home, and for those of you at home, we are excited to be back with the start of our fourth season. We are really excited to get going here on the Screenfish Radio and the podcast. And we go every other week. Sometimes we get one in between there, but generally every other Sunday, the podcast is out. And you can find it on iTunes, on Podomatic, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, or of course on screenfish.net. And if you go to the screenfish.net podcast page, you will also find Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you can have after you see the film. If you do decide to watch it with friends, just some things to get the conversation started as well with you, because it is so much more important for us that you're talking about the film where you are if you're going to see it. Once again, guys, thank you so much for being on. As always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
Sorry.
I'm keeping that in.
I think the only blooper there should be is Steve stringing together his every use of fantastic over and over again, as tight as you can get them.
No, fascinating. It's fascinating.
Sorry.
It's fascinating. It really isn't fascinating, Steve. Stop saying it's fascinating.